Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Drawn by Success. I've got my partner in crime here, Bob Ostrom.
Hi, guys.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. How are you, Carlos?
I'm doing fantastic, sir.
We have a great interview lined up for today.
We do have a great interview lined up today. You know, we talk about a lot about diversifying, you know, as an illustrator and trying to find other things to do and other income streams. Have you ever thought about maybe going the fine art route with your illustration or artwork?
I think about that all the time.
Do you?
I think about it all the time.
Well,
I'm thinking about it right now.
Our guest today is a good friend of mine, Allie Loop, and she's done precisely that. Allie Loop is originally from Argentina. She was a designer, illustrator, and an animator for MTV, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, Cartoon Network. She's gone from doing that commercially as a commercial artist to transitioning over to a fine artist, and she's put like a crap load of gallery showings that she's kind of strung together in the last, I don't know, 18 months or 18 in like a year's time or something. Something ridiculous. I mean, it's crazy.
Actually, so Allie, 8 months.
Okay, 8 months. You did how many galleries?
Like 20.
20. All right. So this is exactly what I want to talk about, though, because how do you make the transition from going from a commercial artist to doing your own thing and really creating your own characters and finding a market for that and getting yourself out there and getting that kind of recognition? So, Allie, welcome to the show.
Hello. That's a big question. The easiest and like the shortest answer is that you do it with shameless self-promotion.
I like that.
Yeah. Basically really promoting yourself and really figuring out exactly who your market is, like who you are doing your art for, and going after them and starting promoting, like promoting yourself to them, and then they start inviting you to show in their galleries, and everything starts going from there. But it's really self-promotion.
Okay, let me back up just a little bit, because I know, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit. As far as the self-promotion stuff, I mean, how do you determine in your fine art with your work? And by the way, for anyone listening that wants to see Allie's work, it's you can find it at allieloop.com. That's A-L-E-L-O-O-P.com. How do you determine, how do you find your audience for the kind of style of artwork you do?
I think the easiest is to well, first show it to as many people as you can to see like what are their reactions and who reacts. Also, really seeing the art, looking at it very objectively. Like, for example, my art is very playful, colorful, and happy. And so I know that people that are going to react to that, they react naturally to happy things, and they are playful. The way that I discovered my market was actually having booths at art fairs and comic book conventions. And it's great to do several of those a year, because it really reminds you who buys from you, because you actually get to talk to them, which is wonderful. And I discovered that going to the art fairs and the comic book conventions is that the people that buy my art are artists of all ages, and couples, like women and men, over 50, that buy for their sons, like adult sons and daughters, and they are playful. Those are the two main categories of people that buy, and it's it keeps happening. I keep meeting people in different places, and no matter what, they are going to be either over 50 and buy, or they are going to be artists and buy. It's those two main categories. And I only discovered that from going to having a table and an art fair.
Now, One of the things that, you know, you mentioned that your audience is people that are interested in happy art, and you know, a month or two ago when we were talking about this, it really surprised the hell out of me, because we were talking about precisely this, and you know, so when you said, well, it's people that collect happy art, they're interested in happy art, I'm like, people are looking for happy art? And I went to Google and typed in happy art, 26 million.
Yep.
26 million people are looking for happy art. Okay. So,
yep.
So, I mean, this to me was an awakening, because I mean, you know, how, you know, who would know?
Well, the thing is that I got really good. My mother-in-law, she taught me how to do SEO a few years ago. She has a party supply online store, and she does really, like, she's in the seven figures with online exclusively.
Wow.
And she's a master of keywords. So I had a few classes with her on how to do it and how to optimize my website. And I started searching, and it kind of becomes addictive, actually, to search for keywords. But that's a great way. You have to put adjectives to your art or what you do. And from those, you figure out, you start searching for keywords in the keyword research tool that is free in Google. And you start discovering amazing things that you never thought before. Like that, people also search for fan art. There are a bunch of words like that, that particularly for what I do, that will be my direct audience. In the fine art world, what I do is called pop surrealism. Some people call it newbrow, lowbrow, urban contemporary, but it's really pop surrealism. And not that many people search for pop surrealism art. Like, there are more searching for maybe lowbrow art, which is a little bit less happy than what I do. For example, type of keyword that is a little bit more Hello Kitty than me, like more flat art, more illustration, will be cute art. That's another way to describe it. And it's just thinking adjectives in how you will describe it, and that's the way to find it.
That's interesting. Would you be willing to do like an SEO workshop for artists, like a little webinar with us?
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's try to schedule that, Bob. That's because we were just talking about that just yesterday.
I think that's great. Can I ask you about your site too? I went to your site, and boy, you have a lot of stuff on there, but it's all very fun, and it makes me want to check out everything. Tell me a little bit about how you came up with some of the ideas of what to include and what to leave out.
Well, originally I had my whole portfolio there in my previous site, which was about, I would say, 2 hours or 2.5 hours of animation to give you an idea on like 15 to 30 second, 1 minute spots,
sure.
Which is a lot. And doing a course last year with she's a wonderful woman. Her name is Laura Roder, and she teaches, like, I learned WordPress, and she had a course called Creating Fame. And it was sort of like how to launch yourself to the online world, basically, and like how to use social media. That at that time it was very new, and sure, I really had no idea what to do about it. And she actually suggested that I make the site much smaller than what it used to be, and just choose a few spots of like the 2.5 hours, and just choose a little bit, like the most fun or whatever I like the most with them. So that is actually a reduced portfolio. And I have been thinking at some point in putting everything back on, because people used to spend about 2 hours in my website. That would be the average of time. And now it has gone down to like 40 minutes. And I think you can, I mean, the more time that people spend with you, the more that they connect, you know, with you.
Sure.
And I really enjoyed, actually. I got a bunch of projects from people actually using different spots that I had done to pitch projects and then hiring me to do them. So that hasn't like I only got one project like new from the small portfolio. And I think at some point, if I want to go back to do motion graphics and animation for hire, I will need to put back everything else. I was sort of starting to make the transition to something else that at that time I didn't know exactly what it was. So I took them down. And what to choose, I thought, the way to divide it was more put the new stuff first, like the all of the paintings and the art, and put the animation a little bit behind because that's what I had been doing. And I wasn't doing that anymore, like for at least a year. And the projects, they are actually, all of them are like that. It was kind of, I mean, everything is, that's kind of my style. The projects that I get in the projects that all of the jobs that I got hired for, like my subject line in the emails to get those jobs will be fan animator or fan designer. And so I got jobs that were fun, you know?
That's great. So if you put the message out, people will find you for that.
Yeah, and then they give you work that is related to that you're naturally good, and you're basically selling yourself already as a fan person, you know?
That's great.
Like my first website, for example, was, what was it? It was with a crab. Originally, Aleloup was a crab, and he will play, it had a random script, so you will play rock, paper, scissors with him, and to go to anywhere in the website, you had to choose a rock, paper, or scissors, and it will actually, because it had the random script, you will actually literally be playing like if you were playing with a person. So from the beginning, like companies, I will send emails to the companies I was interested to work with, and they will come to my site, they will see fan animator, you know, or fan designer.
Sure.
And then they will come to my site and they will have to play, you know, with me.
That's a great tactic. I love that.
So from the beginning, I just, the jobs that I got were like that, you know. That's like fantastic. Bank of America didn't hire me, you know, unless they want to do something to, I don't know, something really out there, or the, I don't know, CNN, for example, unless they want to do something really playful and colorful, that I'm not the right person for them. And it's right. Like obvious.
Yeah. I mean, that comes through on your site for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is a fun site. I went there last night, and I was talking with Carlos. We were doing a little bit of prep for the interview, and I kept saying, Carlos, did you see this thing? Did you see that thing? We went to the iguana page. There's iguanas swimming in the pool.
Did you see my cat flossing?
That one I haven't seen yet, but I'm definitely going back there. Yeah, we're going to find it. We'll find it. It's good stuff. Very fun.
Allie, so... Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that you're experimenting again with animation,
mm-hmm.
to animate the characters that you have. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you're putting a lot of focus on these characters that you're creating for your line of fine art paintings. Mm-hmm. How did you focus on these characters?
The story is, in the short version, is in 06, I was at Comic-Con in San Diego. One of my shorts was playing there at the film festival. And there I sort of discovered, I was still working for MTV, and I had started figuring out that I needed to find my own style and do like my own thing. I was always in love with cartoons and with cartoon series and movies. And I wanted to start making my own series, like my own property. And when I was there, there were so many characters, and I realized, okay, that's where I want to go. But in that trip, I started to get really sick, and that was in July, and by September, I was in bed, and I was sick for I was in bed for about almost a year with a couple of surgeries, and the whole thing took about 2 years to finally recover. And when I was at the airport, my most famous characters are the Chihuahuas in space, like the Chihuahua dogs that are on spaceships. And the first animation I'm making is with them. And they are FBI agents, and they have different missions that they go into. And they were maybe the third or fourth drawing that I did were those Chihuahuas. And when I came back to Miami, I really started to get sick and was in a lot of pain and had to take a lot of painkillers and things like that sort of will put me to sleep as much as possible. And there were months actually where I basically lived kind of second by second. A second went by. This was okay. I lived through it. Let's see what happens in the next minute. And I realized at some point during those months that I needed to start drawing it again, and I needed to start sketching. And at that time, I could maybe sketch for 1 minute, a day. That was all I could do. I could sort of sit up, draw a little bit, and then go back to sleep. And what happened was I was afraid of drawing because I thought that I would draw bloody stuff, skulls and bones and really creepy things, and which are not a turn on for me at all. But what I was going through, I thought that's what I was going to do. But actually what came out with the characters, I started drawing these characters, and I have hundreds of them, and they made me happy. I would look at them and make me happy and think, oh, okay, I should draw more. This is a good thing. And at some point, I started to get better. And the characters were a big part of it because I would look at them and draw them and think, okay, these things need to be out in the world and they have a message. They have some sort of happy, full of life message that I need to get it out there. And having that, I started to get better very, very rapidly. And they really helped me to get out of being sick. It was it was weird, but it was amazing. That was what made me actually really want to keep, living and getting back to be healthy, to be able to do something with them.
Yeah. So from there, so it was a healing process for you.
It was a healing process for me. And from that moment, I knew that I had to work with them. I had to find their world. And I was still having my full-time job and sort of coming back to life after being a year and a half not going to the office and pretty much not getting out of my bed. So it took a while until I got back healthy again. And I had issues. I couldn't really find what was the world. I gave them names and jobs and started writing the stories. And I asked one of my friends, a copywriter at Cartoon Network, I will write the main story, the names, the jobs, and the main thing that they do. Then my husband will take a run at them, and my friend at Cartoon will also take a run at them. And he was really, really funny. So between the three of us, we sort of created the stories of the first maybe 10 or 11. And from there, I would draw them, I would put them in the computer, and it was just not, it wouldn't click for me. There was some other world that needed to be discovered. And it took me a couple of years until I actually started painting to find the world. I started painting in December 2009, or maybe November 09, something like that. During the first weekend of December in Miami, there is a big art event called Art Basel that is sort of like the Super Bowl of art. And basically the whole city gets taken by, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people that come to see art from everywhere.
All over the world, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And galleries and art collectors and just, it's amazing the amount of people that come. And when I was there, I was in a show of pop surrealism. And when I saw the art, I thought to myself, wow, this is amazing. Like, I belong here. I have to be in these walls, like in this show or a show like this next year, and I have to start painting because, like, I have to be, the characters need to be on the walls. And it was just a feeling, like I saw the walls and I thought, this, I belong in this place. And so I started taking a painting class, and I had really, I mean, I know how to draw, but I had never really painted other than in my Wacom tablet, on my Quantel tablet, like long time ago, and it was like it was like a duck in the water, basically. Like I got in, my second painting was one of the paintings that started to show. Like in the month maybe fourth that I was painting, I started to show, and it became like between 2 to 4 shows a month, basically, and then painting like crazy. And when I was painting, that's when the world really came alive and when the characters really came alive. And when I started to see them, a few months after, I started to look at them and I need them to move. Like I can see them talking, you know, moving and living, and I must make it. That's why I'm starting to go back into animation.
And what's your goal or your that you have in mind for the animation? Any goal, or is it just another form of taking the expression that you have for these characters to the next level? And there is really no goal at this point.
Oh, no, there is a goal. With the Chihuahuas in Space, I want to make an animated show, like an animated TV show. I'm working on the pilot right now and want to put it out there. And at some point when it's ready, like when the Bible is ready, I mean, when everything is ready, I'm going to start pitching it to the networks. And I'm writing... I took a screenwriting class, and originally I went to film school, and at that time the screenwriting it was terrible. Like, we didn't really write anything, and I wasn't like emotionally ready to write anything. And through this year, doing several like different mastermind events, I figured out what was my block with the writing. And I took a screenwriting class, and also part of my newsletter goes to the directors of animation that I really like. And one of them, the director of Monsters, Inc. and Up, he wrote me back, and I asked him a few questions, and he answers them. And he explained, my question was how to go from an idea to a real story. Like from the concept to writing the story. And the way that he explained to me how to do it, it clicked. Like it suddenly clicked in my mind. And basically a couple of nights after, I wrote the entire treatment for an animated feature film that one of my goals this year is to get to a first draft with it. And I wrote the concept, like I put down another idea that I had, I wrote down the concept and 2 short films that I want to make also. And the short films, there is no really, you can't really make money with them. With the movies or a TV series, you can get picked up and then producers put money, so then you can make a living doing it. But it takes a little while, you know, to get to that point. But the goal is to keep painting, because painting is part of the creative process for me. I draw them and then I like painting them. And And then I want to be directing animation, directing my movies and directing a TV show.
Now, you mentioned that he had mentioned, he had said something to you that kind of clarified the process for you. What was that, if you don't mind us sharing that with us?
He said, let me see if I have his letter. What he explained was that writing a story is basically the same as painting. When you are painting, you don't start, you don't go from left to right to, doing everything perfect. Like, you start with a sketch, and then you give some sort of, like, an underpainting, like a background color, and then you keep working on it, and you keep an eye on the whole painting, like, at all times.
So it's really never really like a linear process. Sometimes it's kind of back and forth a little bit.
Exactly. And that with the story is basically the same. And first you write, like, the emotional scenes of the movie, like the key points of the movie, and then you start going, like, from big, you start going into the more particular scenes, and that mainly the main thing, the way to learn that, to how to do it, is by doing it, you know. And he was totally right. So after that, I took a screenwriting class here in Miami, and what I wanted to get out was for design or for animation or drawing, like, I have the tools. Like, I can design, animate, or draw. Like, you ask me, oh, I need this thing, and I go and do it. Like, I have the tools to do it at any time I want to, like, to be creative and come up with something, you know, original at any time. It's not that I have to wait until I'm inspired. And with writing, I didn't have the tools to do that. So I wanted to get the tools to know how to write a scene, how to write a character, and really how to do it. And I got those tools, so I'm doing it. It's a lot of work, the writing, and a lot of edit. You realize that you do too much, and it's better the less with the story. And it's a fascinating process for me, that how it works.
You know, just quickly, I wanna touch on something that I've known about you, but just in the last few minutes, a couple of key things that have come up that I want to make sure that no one kind of just fluffs off. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned taking that SEO workshop with your mother-in-law, you know, devoting time to that. Creating Fame with Laura Roeder. That was an expensive program, because I'm familiar with it. That you took with her to get you, you know, to get you where you needed to be. And also the mindset workshop that you took, you know.
I actually took several. I that wasn't the only one. I took two more after that, which are thousands of dollars, by the way.
That was with Fabian Fredrickson?
Yeah, and then I did two with David Nagel, and I'm doing another program with him, months to months, actually. And the thing is, doing those, that's what allowed me to break free from the issues with writing. Doing one of those masterminds, I realized, like, how silly was the issue, that I couldn't, like, I was ashamed of my stories. And it was so silly, you know. I came up with that blog when I was, I don't know, 6 years old. And when you see today, like, when you're a grown up and you see, wow, I'm still seeing the world really emotionally from when I was five, you realize, you know, I can do anything. Like, I can tell these stories. They are in me. And you sort of break free of those things that stop you, and it's really moving. I mean, you can only do them if you really want to work on yourself and, you know, better yourself.
You know, yeah, and that's really the point I wanted to get across, is that you know, a lot of people use excuses for not getting things done, or because they don't have the information or whatever, but. You know, in the last 10 minutes or so, you've already explained to us how you've invested both time and resources to acquiring the knowledge that you needed, or to get you past those hurdles that you know were holding you back. Because continuing to do the same thing that you were doing wasn't going to make you move forward. So you made the investment to, you know, handle the problem, and so that you can go ahead and move forward to those areas that you wanted to grow in. And I just wanted to make sure that wasn't easily passed up by anyone, because it does take, in most cases, you know, time and yes, resources, money, in your case, thousands of dollars, because I know these programs that you're talking about. But you know, it's worth it if you're serious about, you know, taking what you're creating to that next level. Then it either comes down to either doing it or not doing it. So, you know, there is no third option that's going to drop down from the sky for you.
No, absolutely. And really, the thing is, like, the first step for it is that you have to make the decision that you're doing it, you know. Right. And when the thing is that taking those types of courses, I generally learn very quickly. I didn't know this. I only found this out when I came to the States, where I found that you could learn anything. You could go to the library, like the public library, and they have all of the books. They had a computer lab, and I had no money when I came to the States, and you could learn anything that you wanted. All of the information was right, like, there, cheap to learn. So I did, and I discovered that I could learn, I don't know, software in a weekend, and like things like that I didn't know it was possible. And I'm actually always continuously learning new software and new things that are coming out, just out of curiosity. And also, it's fascinating how easier it is now, for example, to animate and to do things in Photoshop or in Flash that it used to be 10 years ago. It makes everything so much faster and so much more, like, you don't need to be an expert on animation, for example, on character animation to start animating your characters and giving them life, you know, and making it happen very quickly. And I'm pretty impatient. So for me, the thing of being quick, it's a must. And the thing that the main thing that I found doing these mastermind groups in being like month to month with a coach, for example, is that you don't even know what is stopping you. You don't even know the excuses you put to yourself to not do things. Like you make them sound like oh, they are really good reasons, you know, and in reality they are really excuses, and that it takes way longer to think about doing things than actually just doing them, you know, having the balls and just saying, okay, yeah, I might like fail at this, I might make a mistake, and for me, for example, my main excuse is, oh, I don't have time to do that. Like, you know, it's going to take too much time and I have too many things to do, for example. And I used to say that like very often to many things. And since I realized that that was an excuse, I get a lot more stuff done than before because of that. And also, I was afraid, and I am still afraid of doing things wrong. Like, for example, animated something or animating the character that I come more from motion graphics than character animation. And I am afraid of doing it wrong, you know, of sucking at it, you know, not being good. And until you actually do it and you practice, you know, the first one is really not good, you know. And you have to get good at it. It's just, but if you don't know that is stopping you and you put it as an excuse, you don't even try it, you know? You should say, oh, I'm not good at it. Or, oh, well, maybe I'm going to fail. I'm not going to be good at it, so I'm not even going to try, you know? And the masterminds give you that, and also make you have those breakthrough moments. For example, realizing what was holding me back to write the stories. And it would have never happened. I mean, going years to a shrink, for example, you don't discover things like that there.
Not that we would know. I don't know why you said that, Allie.
I think she was aiming at you, Carlos.
Yeah, and you end up discovering actually that everything is really silly. Like, it's really silly why you not do things. And it's kind of, I don't know, at the end you end up laughing of why you didn't do something.